Renegade Health Radio.
Renegade Health Radio, this is Frederick Bathnott, and today with me is Shelley Stein, and we're going to do another book review. Welcome, Shelley.
Good morning, Frederick. How are you?
Very well, thank you. I'm in Montreal, and you're in Vancouver. How is it?
I am. Happy holidays, everybody.
We're going to talk about a new book called The Big Book of Health and Fitness. Actually, it's not a new book, but it's probably the first time we bring up the author on the show and in Renegade Health in general. So the book is called The Big Book of Health and Fitness by Dr. Philip Maffetone, also known as the person behind the Maffetone Method or the 180 Method. So I'll let you begin, Shelley, in terms of how you discovered this book. I know you've known the author for longer, and I discovered him recently,
right,
a year ago via Kevin Gianni, and I was like, wow, this is a great discovery. And when I brought it up, you're like, oh yeah, used to know him like a while ago, and he's an old timer, and so I didn't know him. This is new, and for you, this is not so new. But some of his advice is very exciting for me and has been very useful. So that's one reason why I wanted to bring up this book.
Sure. You know, it was interesting to me, Frederick, because when you happened to mention in an email, and, you know, you and I always talk about exercise and health and fitness, and you happened to mention his name and that you had found his website and you were using some of his exercise advice. And I it was very interesting for me because Phil Maffetone has been around a really long time, and I'll talk about the difference with some of his earlier books and this book. And I said to you, wow, let's take a look at this book, because if his philosophy of exercise has made a difference for you, let's take a deeper look at this and let's see what he's talking about now. So just to give people a little, so that's how we came to decide on this book. And you had not read the book before, and I had not read this particular book before, though, as you mentioned, I've been familiar with his exercise and his books. I want to say maybe at least 10, 12 years already, at least 10 or 12 years already. So just to give people a bit of a background, Phil Maffetone he's a doctor, but he calls himself complementary medicine type of doctor. And although he currently lives in Tucson, he did start his private practice in upstate New York, I believe. And he basically talks a lot about one of his key points is that health and fitness are not the same. So maybe we could talk a little bit about that. And also that when you're talking about health and fitness, you really need to have an individualized plan, that there's no one plate fits all, for instance. And just his general philosophy is that you eat real food, you get high quality proteins, you eat a lot of veggies and fruits, and you drink adequate amounts of water. So that's his nutritional take on things. And he says, "What did you when you first saw his website, Frederick? What enticed you to try out some of his ideas?"
Well, first, how I discovered Phil Maffetone was from Kevin Gianni's book, Kale and Coffee. So Kevin Gianni wrote this book, Kale and Coffee, on his experience in the natural health world. And Kevin is a really good writer. And one of the problems with his book is that it doesn't have a promise. It's not like, oh, read this book and you'll achieve this. It's kind of like a look at different random subjects. But a positive aspect of this particular method of writing a book is that it brings up many different things. So I picked up Phil Maffetone's ideas on training from the exercise chapter in Kevin's book. And it made a lot of sense to me because I've been trying to exercise for many years and trying to improve my exercise routine. And I always ran into the same issues of hurting myself.
Mm-hmm.
I always blamed the injuries on other factors, possibly my posture, possibly everybody has a different answer. And mm-hmm. kind of a light went on when I read the chapter about exercise, about why most people are exercising too hard for their level of fitness. And because of this philosophy of high intensity training and CrossFit, a lot of people are getting injured by exercising way beyond their fitness abilities when they start. And I could relate to that. So I discovered Phil's website from the description in Kevin's book. And then I spent a lot of time reading it. And it's, to be honest, it's not a very well-organized website. So you kind of glean an idea here and there. And then after spending many hours reading the website and the comments, I eventually got his idea on fitness. And we're going to talk about it in a moment, what's different about it. And then I started implementing it, and it really helped me because I improved my fitness abilities, but also I've been injury free for like 6 months at least, which is great for me because I could not exercise for more than a few months in a row without my back problems coming back. And exercising this way has, not just improved this, I have not had any symptoms come back. So I'm very happy about that. And so that's kind of what brought me to his philosophy. And then I was looking for a book to talk about on the Renegade Health show. But the other books are more for athletes, for example, How to Train for a Marathon. And this book is more like an overall health philosophy. So that seemed more relevant to our audience.
Yeah, and it's interesting because he originally, as you mentioned, his original books, so let me just give you a little bit of background here. His original books were very one topic oriented. So there were smaller books. Frederick and I can tell you, I don't have the book in front of me, but this book is hundreds of pages. This book is everything Phil has to say about diet, exercise, healthy aging, illness, injury prevention. He talks about everything in this book. So this, to me, is his culminating work. But when he first started, he would take a particular topic like training with a heart rate monitor or training for a marathon or, increasing your aerobic capacity. He didn't talk about nutrition very much in the early days. And he talked about health and fitness from an exercise perspective, because I think that's how he got his, even though he was a complementary doctor, I think his start was with physical training. So his early books were smaller books, one topic books. And in this, and I guess over the years, he sort of put it all together to what we might call an overall plan, to include health and fitness. So that the first part of the book really has to do more with the nutritional aspect of what he considers to be healthy nutrition. And then the second part of this book is more what we're talking about, which is the exercise and the fitness. So, and he really wants people, exactly what you're talking about, he really wants people to understand the difference between health and fitness. So if you're pushing your health, your fitness, for instance, to an extreme, how healthy can you really be if you're injured all the time? You're really putting your health, your cardio health, your skeletal health, your muscular health, you're really putting all of that, not to mention your stress, that aspect of health, you're really putting that in jeopardy if you overtrain. And if your nutrition, even if your nutrition is in line, but you're hurting yourself all the time physically by injuring yourself, you're not really gaining the overall health that you're hoping to gain. And so too many people lump health with fitness. And so fitness, Phil might define, and I would agree with him, fitness is being able to, let's say, run a mile. Fitness is being able to lift a certain amount if you're working out with weights. Fitness would be how many push-ups can you do? Things like that. So it's a physical endeavor, right? Health is a more general term. Health is how's your diet? How are you aging? Are you preventing? He talks a lot about anti-inflammatories. Are you preventing inflammation? Are you happy? Are you enjoying life? So health is a more of an umbrella concept, where fitness is a very specific, can I do something?
Yes, and he describes this in the first part of his book, the difference between fitness and health. And but what I liked about it also was that he brought a story of how he realized that maybe he was fit but not so healthy when he was running a marathon, or maybe his first marathon. And he writes that all was going well during the first 10 miles, but after he began to feel tired, to shiver, he had all kinds of cramping problems and so on, and he kind of managed to make it and finish the marathon, but he saw all of these other runners, sick-looking runners, lying on cots, groaning in pain, ambulances coming and going, and he was wondering at that time, you know, okay, are these people really healthy? I mean, yes, you can physically run the marathon, but are you in a state of balance in your health? And what I realized by implementing his fitness advice is that most people train incorrectly. They train too hard at the beginning. It's not progressive. They're not increasing the load over time. They're doing the same thing all the time. They're not paying attention to their feelings. They're going by raw numbers. Okay, I ran today. I ran 8 miles in so much time, right? And then, so next time I'm gonna try to do a little better. But it doesn't work like that all the time. It's not all about numbers. It's about how you feel. So, do you mind, Shelley, if we kind of give an overview of the fitness advice that Phil has, and then we could talk a little bit about the other topics, but because I'd like to talk about what I've been doing following his advice and what you think about it.
Sure. And one of the things that might surprise people is that, you know, there was a time when, and I'm talking about the general population. I'm not talking about elite athletes or people who are training for an Ironman or something like that. I'm just talking about the general population. There was a time when, because one of Phil's, what we're going to talk about too, is one of Phil's ideas and that he really is very well known for, and he's one of many who's well known for it, but he's been talking about this for a long time, is training with a heart rate monitor. And I remember back in the day, you would go into a gym, you would work with a trainer, and it was always heart rate based training so that you knew which zone you were training in. And somehow that seems to have gotten lost. And I don't want to blame it on CrossFit, because CrossFit is great for the people who are doing that. And, you know, that works for them. But there's something about heart rate monitor training that kind of fell out of favor. I can't explain it. It's almost like people forgot about it. And but every now and then, you know, I'll be out exercising and I'll see somebody with a heart rate monitor on. And so it's always been curious to me, because we have so much more technology. Everybody's wearing the Fitbit. Everybody's wearing all the training tools that they have. But rarely, if I talk to somebody about training in the heart rate zone, rarely are they aware of it. And for you, Frederick, you're saying that was a huge light bulb that went on in your head.
Well, the light bulb was not so much using a heart rate monitor, because I've been using one for like 10 or 15 years. I was, when I started running, or even before that, I remember running 15 years ago with a heart rate monitor. But the difference is I did not use the right range for heart rate.
Yeah.
So what I thought was the right heart rate was too high. And I remember, it's funny, because it's not just Phil Maffetone who has these ideas. I remember I knew an elite athlete back in the days, a friend of a friend who was winning races and so on. And he worked at a running store at some point. And he was giving me some advice back then. And I did not listen to his advice. I should have listened to his advice. So I was telling him, yeah, I'm training and so on. And he asked me what my heart rate was when I was running. And then I told him something like, on average, 155, 160, beat 165. And he's like, whoa. He said, dude, if I run at this pace, I'd be doing a 3-minute kilometer, you know, like I'd be like racing like quickly. He said, you should be in the like 130, 135 zone. And I told him, oh, okay, that sounds great. And then I remember going back the next day and running at that, and trying to keep my heart rate at 130, 135. And I was like almost walking, you know, fast. I was not running. And it was so discouraging. I was like, oh, well, I can, you know, this is like way too slow. I'm not getting any benefits. So I did not take his advice because I did not understand the advice. And I was.
It's very difficult for people to, with our bodies, it's very difficult for people to understand that harder is not better. Faster is not better. There's a lot of ego involved, particularly with men, Frederick, particularly with men. It's almost like I see that people want, they want to tough it out. They want to make it harder because they think it's going to be better and it's going to make them more fit. And exactly the opposite is happening one of two ways. Either you'll be injured a lot, which is what you're talking about. That's been your history, or you're hurting yourself. I mean, your heart is a muscle. And just like with other muscles, it can suffer from overuse and it can suffer from stress and strain. And it's very efficient. So one of the terms we want to talk about is, you know, the efficiency of fitness. How do you become fit in a very efficient way without injuring yourself? Because I think that's the bottom line.
Yeah, I mean, there were many light bulbs that went on over the years, and sort of like following your instincts is the way to go, but often theory gets in the way, and that's what happened to me with going to gyms, getting personal trainers. They would always push me too hard, too mm-hmm. fast, mm-hmm. and I knew it was not the right thing to do, but I kind of thought, okay, I want to make progress. I am making progress. So, and you have that excitement of going back mm-hmm. to exercise after being relatively sedentary for a while and getting, you know, seeing fast progress. And on my last experience at the gym with personal trainers, I knew this was not right because they, even though they didn't call their training CrossFit, it was very influenced by this philosophy that is very popular at the moment of high intensity training or mm-hmm. circuit training. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a great way to exercise if you have the fitness ability and also if you're able to recover from it and just pace it properly. Mm-hmm. But
and it's not just for younger people either. So for instance, I have a client who is in an older woman in her 70s, and she's in rehabilitation from a knee replacement with working with a physical therapist. And she was doing really well. She got off the walker. She was starting to walk with a cane. And in physical therapy, you know, she has a young physical therapist who I'm sure is good and bright and means well. And the young physical therapist, you know, pushed her too hard and increased her activity by too much. She came away hurting, and it was actually a setback. And what I tell her is you know your body, you live in your body. And when it seems like somebody is pushing, even though they're a physical therapist or even though they're a personal trainer, when it feels to you like somebody is pushing you too hard or increasing your intensity or the volume of what you're doing by too much, you have to learn to say no. You have to learn to say, you know, this is my body and I'm living in my body and this is too much for me. And I think what happened to you with your experience in the gym and stuff, it's a challenge to strike that balance with the ego and what's actually happening with your body and what it means to make progress and sustain progress.
Yeah, because they're going to tell you, that's fine. You tell them, okay, this is too hard for me and so on. And I need to take more time to get to this point. And then I'm going to say, this is fine. Okay, so you can just, you know, take more time to do it or drop a few exercises and so on. But it's still, even if you follow that advice, it's still going to be too much because you don't have – how are you going to measure that? So
right.
What I like with the heart rate monitor mm-hmm. is that it's a very objective way of looking at it. And so just to give everyone kind of an idea of what we're talking about, the – philosophy that you hear a lot in terms of aerobic training is that the zone is something like 220, the number 220, and then from there you're gonna deduct your age, but then you're gonna go by a percentage of to get in the right zone.
Right, and you know, go ahead, Frederick. I'm sorry.
Oh, just I can explain the rest after.
Yeah, no. What I was gonna say is he makes it even simpler, and I think. Percentages, you know, people, it's hard Let's just say that math is a challenge for a lot of people. So what I really like is to take the percentage out of the equation, and I like to take the number 180 and just minus your age from 180. So let's say for me, I'm 60. So I'm going to take 180 and I'm going to minus 60, and that gives me 120. And so 120 is more or less my zone. And it's if you figure out the percentage on that, it will come out to be about the same percentage wise.
Yes, exactly. So he goes by that, and then he has a few tools in terms of if you're really unfit and you're just getting back into it, you're going to deduct a few numbers,
right?
Like so, 5 or 10, or if you're on medication and so on.
Sure. So it's easy. It's so think about if I'm at 120, so that's my zone for my aerobic training. I might go 5 under and 5 over. So I might say 115 to 125. Would be an ideal zone for me. The challenge becomes that the more fit you are, what do you do? So here's how you progress, because what happens is the more fit you are, the more challenge you need to get into that 120 zone, right? So for me, if I go out and take a walk, because I have a high level of fitness, if I go out and take a walk, it's not necessarily going to get me into my zone. So I have to be really creative to make sure that I'm actually training in that zone. So I have to walk some hills. I might have to walk a little faster. I might have to do some trail running. I might have to put some other things in there to actually get my heart rate up into that zone. So, and that becomes fun. There, that's the fun. So it's not just, oh, every day you go out and you do something and you're in your aerobic training zone, but you have to really start to challenge yourself to come up with more creative ways to get into the zone.
Or if you're doing too much, you're going above your number, then you have to do things to lower it. Maybe it becomes a sort of almost like interval training. You're running a little bit, and then you're walking a little bit. That's what I do. I just walk, or I do more like what is considered jogging, a word that a lot of runners don't like. Oh, I'm not jogging, I'm running. Well, when I was starting out with this method, I was more or less jogging like a very slow pace, and everybody was going faster than me. Everybody. And I was thinking, you know what? This is like the tortoise versus the hare, you know? Like, I'm out there almost every day or 6 days a week, and these people, you know, I stopped seeing them after a while. Like, they were going too fast. Anyway, if everybody is going faster than you, that's a good sign. But then over the months that I was following this method, then my speed increased for the same heart rate. And my resting heart rate lowered. So now I'm running more or less most of the time, but I'm still walking in between. When I see that the heart rate gets a little too high, then I start walking a little bit, and that gives me a rest, and I continue. But it's like you said, Shelley, if I were just walking, I would not get in the zone, and then I would have to think, okay, let's walk some hills, let's do something that will increase it.
Sure. Well, your heart rate, your target heart rate would be about 135 to 145. It's because of your age, so that's a whole different level that you have to get creative with. What I love about his book, and this is the message that it's very hard for people to hear, is he spends a lot of time saying that the best aerobic activity is walking.
Yes. Yes.
And that's, you know, in the train harder, go faster, go harder, speed, the psychological, what you're talking about, the psychological aspect of you walking or you slow jogging or whatever we want to call it, and watching everybody go by, you really have to be committed and really understand the science of training, because what he's talking about is the science of training. This is not anecdotal. This is not, but it really is the science of knowing what's age and fitness appropriate. And again, I love it because I like the idea of doing the minimal amount I need to do for the maximum amount of efficiency with fitness. So, you know, my feeling is that that's what's going to take care of our cardio and our aerobic fitness. That's what's going to take care of the stress. We don't really necessarily need to go so hard and hurt ourselves all the time.
One thing also that was kind of enlightening for me was the understanding the difference between training and racing. Although this is something that makes sense and that seems intuitive, most people don't understand this, that when you're training, this is your regular exercise, you're not going as fast as you would on marathon day or on a race day. This is just what you do to improve your fitness ability. And once you've done that for a certain period of time, a few weeks or a few months, then once in a while you can do something a little bit more difficult. And with the results that you got from training, you can push yourself a little much more on one particular day or a moment. And that then you will see all the results. So it's sort of like train slower in order to race faster.
And right. And, yes. You know, yeah. And I've been a running coach for years, and I put training programs together for clients all the time. And I always include a couple of what we call slow long runs, SLR. And I have a real challenge. Everybody wants the long run. Nobody has a problem with the long run concept, but it's the slow long run concept that a lot of people resist, because there you have to. One of the things he talks about, and all good, if you read the best books in the world on training, written by, you know, the best writers on training for aerobic fitness, you always want to build an aerobic base before you build anything else.
Yes.
And there's a big movement, which I really love, among the young trainers now. And I'm not talking about the running coaches. I'm talking about the guys who are in the gym lifting heavy, lifting heavy, lifting heavy. And they are writing about developing an aerobic base before you develop a strength base, for instance, or before you develop a speed base, if we're talking about running, that it's very important. And I'm also reading a lot of articles by coaches for all the sports teams, the football teams, the baseball teams, the soccer teams, the hockey teams, all the young coaches coming out of school now that are the physical trainers for our professional sports teams. They're all teaching everybody how to develop an aerobic base. And once you have an aerobic base, then you can go add a layer of strength. Then you can go add a layer of speed. The other layers will fall into place, but you have to do the aerobic base. And I'm also starting to hear, when not really starting, it's been around for a couple of years now, and it's really wonderful, with our young athletes, with the kids, because if you don't get the kids to understand that first you build an aerobic base and then you can build any kind of base on top of the aerobics, it's hard to get them to change that mentality when they're older athletes. And it's really wonderful, because it's, for me, it's all about injury prevention, and it's all about how do you age well and stay active. And if you're injured all the time, you know, if you went out and run, Frederick, and you're injured all the time, and every 6 months you're injured, you're going to give up running, and you're going to go find something else. And maybe you love to run. Maybe running is wonderful for you, but you can't figure out how to do it without getting injured. And so you get frustrated and you give up something that you really love. And that would be true of any sport. And it's really sad when people don't get this concept that you have to build an aerobic base, and then you can do other things. And I think that's what you're discovering now in your own training.
Exactly. Because once you make some gains, some of those gains become permanent. Or not permanent, you have to maintain them, but
sure.
Maintaining them is easier than building them. And that's what I discovered with getting injured, repeated injuries, is that I lost a lot of my aerobic base, so I had to build it back. And I had to think, okay, this is more right now. This is more important that I build my aerobic base than I go back to the gym and lift some heavy weights so I don't lose some of my muscle, you know? And so I thought, okay, I'm going to follow his advice, and I'm going to work on the aerobic base for 3 to 6 months. And after that, I can go back to the gym and lift some weights and continue improving my muscle mass. But I know that the muscle mass is not the problem for me, because I spent more time in the past doing that. And what I noticed by focusing exclusively on building the aerobic base, as Phil talks about, is that I didn't lose my muscle mass, or I didn't. It's still there. It's just that I'm focusing on something else, and I can see the difference in my energy and mood and a lot of things by focusing on building that aerobic base. And then after that, it makes a lot more sense to, and it's also a lot easier to include other types of exercise.
No, that's true. I'm not even going to tell you how jealous I am that you maintain your muscle mass, because men maintain their muscle mass so much easier than so much more easily than women do. We lose it really quickly. But I want to, what you just said, Frederick, is the most important point, I think, in this whole talk and this whole conversation that we're having. So I want to repeat that, because that's I hope that people listen to this point, because you just made the whole point. And that is the maintaining of the aerobic base. It is so much healthier, wiser, smarter. I could throw in every adjective of a positive nature here. It's so much smarter to maintain something than it is to lose it and have to regain it. And I could use that as a metaphor for life in general. We see that in the nutrition and the diet world all the time, the yo-yoing of body fat. People lose, people gain. We could see that, in the financial world. I mean, we see that in our lives in general. But when it comes to fitness, which is what we're talking about today, maintaining is the way to go. And you have to figure out a way to maintain your aerobic base so that you can go out and take a walk and do a run and go play some golf and go hiking with some friends and go on a bike ride, because it's the maintaining the aerobic base that allows you to do all that. And the losing and then having to regain, it just wears you out. It's very frustrating. It wears out your body, because if you've lost the aerobic base, it's usually because you've gotten injured. So you have to go back, you've got to rehab the injuries, you've got to go, get yourself through that. You become a little bit nervous when you've been injured. You become a little bit unsteady and unsure of what you're doing and how you're training. Then you have to go regain the aerobic base, and then you have to layer it on with whatever else it is required of your sport. So what you just said is worth the price of admission. It's like maintaining, and again, I always link this to aging well, because if you maintain an aerobic base and you go into your 40s and you go into your 50s with that aerobic base, I guarantee you will age much better. And that's the umbrella of health that we're talking about. So you're not frustrated with your physical health all the time and injuries. So you can work on keeping your brain healthy and improving your nutrition and whatever else in life it is that you want to improve. But when you lose that aerobic base, you run into all kinds of problems. So I really, what you said is the key to this whole conversation, I think.
And what you said, and the way you explained it, Jelly, was outstanding. And I'm sure everyone is getting a lot out of it. I sure am. I just want to add that we're approaching January 2017, and we know what's going to happen. A lot of people are going to sign up for the gym, and they're not thinking like you're thinking, Shelley. They're thinking like, oh, I'm out of shape, I got to get back into shape. Just like people have gained some weight and now they want to yo-yo back into being thin, and we know that they're going to yo-yo back into being fat later. But it's the same with exercise, and I think one of the problems we're facing is that people are yo-yoing with their exercise routine because of what we think is a workout should be. Like a workout is going to a spinning class for an hour and a half and sweating your butt off. And that's not necessarily a workout for everybody. So people give up because when they go back into an exercise routine on January 2nd or whatever, they sign up for the gym, and we know that it doesn't last very long because I think first of all, they're really out of shape and they're trying something that's way too difficult for them. They're not thinking, oh, I got to build back my aerobic base, which might mean walking every day for an hour at a fast pace instead of doing all this other stuff. And then once you've built it back, then it's maintaining it is a lot, well, actually, it isn't not easier in the sense that you, like you said, you'll need to do more effort for the to reach the same heart rate, but it doesn't require you thinking, oh, I gotta get back into shape. I gotta do something. You just keep doing and improving what you're doing. But people are giving up because they go to the gym and they try a routine that is way too intense for where they are at the moment, and they give up after a month or two.
It's true. And, Frederick, as we sort of wrap this up, I want to, this book, again, let's give the name of the book. It's The Big Book of Health and Fitness, and the author is Phil Maffetone. And it's a big book. When you look at this book, it's hundreds of pages long. I don't know, 300, 400 pages long. You don't have to necessarily read this book as from start to finish. Because if what he talks about with nutrition doesn't match your philosophy of nutrition, that's fine. You can read through that stuff and get what you want. He's got some interesting recipes, I thought, in the book. But pay attention to the fitness stuff because, he's lumped a lot of things. Again, I think this is his big book. This is sort of like his culmination of all the other stuff he did. You can go back and get his other books too, the ones that are just that are focused on one particular topic. But if you pick up this book, I want to encourage people to look at the book and get what they need from this book. Because sometimes big books are very discouraging and you think, oh, I can't read all this, or it's, I don't agree with this, or I don't agree with that. What he talks about with fitness in particular, it's classic, it's old school, it works, it's time tested. And I really want to encourage people, like you just mentioned, we're moving into the new year, to really make the new year a time of putting, like what Frederick said, put aside your ideas of what a workout is. And to a certain extent, that's going to mean putting your ego aside. And really put your ego aside when it comes to working out and try and understand what it takes to build an aerobic base. And know that this really is the first step to fitness, not just fitness in the present, but fitness in the future and fitness for the rest of your life. And I encourage people, if you have any questions about this, because some of it is pretty technical, contact Frederick or contact me. We get this stuff. Both of us have been, I've been living this stuff a really long time. Frederick's been living this a really long time. We both use this. We're both healthy and fit because this is what we understand to be the way that you build health and fitness. And, and let us know if you have any questions because we can help you through this kind of stuff.
Thank you, Shelley. That was a wonderful conclusion to this book review. You wrote some really good articles recently, and I want to encourage everyone to join Shelley's mailing list at joyinmovement.com. And thank you so much for listening to the Renegade Health Radio Show. If you'd like to leave a review, please go to iTunes. We'd love to get your 5-star review on the show, and we are also interested in getting your feedback on other books we could review for you. Thank you.
Thanks, Frederick. You have a great day.
Renegade Health Radio.